for individuals interested in the medical field. Welcome to the Doc Talk Podcast, where doctors from around the world discuss groundbreaking work in the medical industry. Because in an ever-changing world, healthcare is constant.
The Doc Talk Podcast is up and running again, and today we have a doctor on board who has arguably played a very important role in people's lives, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Mohit Shah is a renowned psychiatrist practicing in Mumbai since 10 years. He's also a consultant for MedinCell France. He's a winner of Young Scholar Award in Psychiatry in 2009. This award was contested between more than 200 postgraduate students of psychiatry. His areas of interest include depression, anxiety, relationship problems in adolescents and adults, schizophrenia, and bipolar mood disorders. In 2018, he was invited to France to give his opinion on mental health issues and its management in India. Thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to be with us today, Doctor. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me, Tanishka. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. So, Doctor, let's dive into the questions. I think the most important one in psychiatry would be serotonin uptake inhibitors. So what are they and how do they work?
Okay. So, see, basically, serotonin reuptake inhibitors or SSRIs, they are basically antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications. They work by improving the serotonin in the brain, in the presynaptic area. Now, you see, people say anxiety and depression are caused because of negative thoughts or because your thinking is negative. But we have to understand why people think negative. Most of them, because they have some deficiency of some neurotransmitters in the brain, most likely serotonin. And that's why they start feeling, getting negative thoughts, anxiety attacks, and so forth. So when you give an SSRI, it improves the serotonin levels in the brain and it improves to deal with anxiety and depression.
So apart from serotonin, doctor, deficiency of which other neurotransmitters result in psychiatric disorders?
So see, basically, we have three neurotransmitters that are pinpointed to be, responsible for most of the psychiatric illness. If you say depression and anxiety, most likely it's a deficiency of serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine in the brain system that is responsible for causing depression and anxiety. But once if you have an increase in dopamine in certain areas of the brain, you may get hallucinations and delusions, which is more likely to be symptoms of schizophrenia. Also, if some neurotransmitters increase in the brain, you may also have a manic episode, which can be a symptom of bipolar mood disorder. Okay. So we are right now in an era where we are most likely talking about serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine. But as more and more research coming, there is a new system of neurotransmitters that is glutamate neurotransmitters, which are also very, very research about in psychiatric disorder, but still it's a long way to go.
Thank you so much for that. So on a similar note, doctor, there's a drug called pramipraxol that's used to treat Parkinson's disease, but it's also used as an antidepressant. I think it has something to do with the dopamine receptors. Could you explain the mechanism of the drug and what it enables it to do so?
Yes. So see, in Parkinson's, there is a deficiency of dopamine in the nigrostriatal tract of the brainstem. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you increase, and pramipexole is a dopamine receptor agonist. So it helps in improving Parkinson's symptoms. At the same time, there are some dopaminergic components of depression like anhedonia, lack of interest in pleasurable activities, and some other symptoms which are dopaminergic related. So when you give pramipexole, it helps to improve these dopaminergic symptoms of depression.
Okay. So there is a common belief that certain antipsychotics and antidepressants impede cognitive functioning. Is this true? And if not, why is this belief gaining traction?
So see, understand, when you see disorders like schizophrenia and depression, there's definitely a cognitive element of the disorder itself. So it's not that the drug is increasing this component of cognition. It's already a part of the disease. But yes, some drugs do cause some drowsiness and they have some anticholinergic side effects which may impede cognition. But you have to understand that primarily, I don't think it's the drugs, but it's the disorder itself which causes this cognitive decline. And unfortunately, the drugs are blamed for these kind of cognitive dysfunction, but primarily it's the disorder which is responsible for it.
Okay. Okay, so doctor, is addiction genetic in nature or caused due to environmental factors? I've learned about both. Is that the case?
Yeah, especially almost all psychiatric disorders are genetic and environmental and combination of both. You know, a lot of times we have seen that even if a person is brought up in a good environment and if there is a strong genetic history of addiction, that person may get into addiction. But at the same time, if the genes are good, there is no problem. There is no family history of addiction. If a person is in a bad environment, he can develop. But most of these psychiatric disorders have a genetic component and an environmental component. So we called it as a multimodal kind of problems, which is there are 3-4 factors responsible for any psychiatric disorders.
Okay. So, doctor, I think this is a very important question and that everyone should be really aware of. And that would be like, what are the first signs of depression that every individual should know? And why is there a stigma associated with it?
Yeah, it's a very important question. You see, a lot of times people feel depression and sadness is same, but it's not the same. Sadness is an emotion which lasts for around 1 day, 2 days. And once that situation is better, the sadness goes away. But depression is a plethora of symptoms. Like we have like criteria, most commonly used criteria is the DSM-5 or the ICD-11 criteria, where it says that there are some 10 to 12 symptoms of depression. Out of that, if even 5 to 7 are present for more than 15 days, it is called as depression. That will suggest persistent sadness lasting for more than 15 days, crying spells without any apparent reason, lack of sleep, lack of energy, loss of appetite, anhedonia, not able to enjoy pleasurable activities, feeling lonely or being lonely, not interested in anything, meeting friends, going out, going to a school, going to college, going to work. And these symptoms, if they last for more than 15 days, then it is called as depression. And that is the case when a person should seek help. Now, unfortunately, there is a whole idea that psychiatric disorders are not biological. People feel that you can snap out of depression, you can snap out of anxiety by positive thinking, by just talking to friends, going out on a vacation. But that is not the case. We have to understand that, you know, you can get diabetes, you can get hypertension without any apparent cause. Similarly, you can get any psychiatric disorder, most commonly depression and anxiety, without any reason. There has need not be any reason. Even if in life everything is going fine, one may go into depression or anxiety. And what is more important is to understand that it is biological in nature. So we are very okay to go to a doctor for cough, cold, or for diabetes, hypertension. We should be okay to seek help for depression, anxiety, or any other psychiatric illness.
Okay.
Yes, Tanishka.
So, doctor, on a similar note, apart from the biological treatment, like prescribing medication, there's also something called cognitive behavioral therapy. So what would you say are the pros and cons of the same?
Yeah, so definitely, see, cognitive behavior therapy or any form of psychotherapy, we have seen that the patient respond best to these therapies. See, it's like basically if you have a fracture, you put a plaster, and once the plaster is healed, you do physiotherapy, and that gives you the best result. Similarly, if you have a moderate anxiety or depression or any other psychiatric disorders, which are moderate to severe in intensity, what works best is combination of medication, that is pharmacotherapy, And a psychotherapy, most commonly used is cognitive behavior therapy, which gives you the best reason. In fact, even for mild anxiety and depression, one can only seek therapy and not take medication. And that is also very, very helpful. So basically in cognitive behavior therapy, it deals with your thought process. It's based on the principle that if you correct your thought process, then your response to a problem or adversity will improve. And over a period of time, you learn to think more cognitively, more rationally to deal with your problems. And it's a very, very, very popular psychotherapy, which is used in practice.
Okay. So, Doctor, I think this is also a really important question that many people have been frequently asking me, and that would be, what coping mechanisms can individuals battling ADHD equip in order to function normally in their everyday lives?
Yeah. So, see, many a times, basically, in ADHD, the patient or even the relatives or the parents or the school teachers are not aware that this person is suffering from ADHD. So there is constant nagging that sit at one place, don't do mischief, don't do this, don't do that. But you have to understand that person with ADHD, first of all, he himself should be aware that he is going through this problem. At the same time, the surrounding environment, the teachers, the parents also should be aware. Because once you are aware, these kind of nagging goes down. Mm-hmm. At the same time, a person with ADHD needs to basically focus his attention or her attention on completing the task, trying to, give themselves a timeline that, okay, I will sit in this lecture for 20 minutes. I'll try and concentrate. I will not fidget around. Also, people with ADHD need to pursue subjects which are of their interest. Then only they're able to keep their attention. But yes, if the ADHD is moderate to severe, they may require medication to keep their focus and attention and do well in their career or studies. But I think awareness is the most important thing that needs to be that is to be there in patient as well as relatives and immediate family members.
Yeah, I agree. That definitely goes for all psychiatric disorders. Awareness is really crucial. So, Doctor, yes. What would you say is the cause and symptoms of bipolar disorder and how is it treated?
So, again, cause is most likely it has a genetic component. You will have a distant relative or a very close relative who has suffered from some similar forms of bipolar mood disorder. But also it can be induced by some substances like cocaine, or meth or some stimulants. It can also aggravate and push you to mania. So both, I think, genetic component is important. Sometimes the substance can also induce it. And the most common symptoms are it begins with a manic episode where you get extremely overexcited. You lose your sleep. You become overly aggressive. You start spending a lot of money. And once that manic episode settles down or comes down, then you get into a depressive episode. So a symptom of depression in a normal depression, which is called as unipolar depression, and symptoms of depression in bipolar depression are a little different. Especially in bipolar depression, the suicidal thoughts is very, very common. A lot of people who commit suicide have bipolar depression. And bipolar depression is more severe than unipolar depression. And it requires a different form of treatment. Yes.
Okay. So, Doctor, apart from that, I also wanted to ask about Alzheimer's disease. And many people believe that amyloid beta is responsible for it. So could you care to explain how exactly it is caused and how is it different from dementia?
Yeah. So, see, dementia is a broad term which is used for most problems which are related to memory. Now, in general, if a 75-year-old has some memory problem, it is normal. But a 60-year-old starts having a lot of memory problem is something you should be suspicious about, because And now we are seeing that, so as you said, that dementia is a broader term, and dementia can be many types. Most common types is Alzheimer's, where you see the beta amyloid plaques in the brain. We don't know the exact reason. Over a period of time, the beta amyloid plaques starts getting developed in the brain parenchyma, and you start developing memory problems. So Alzheimer's dementia is the most common form of dementia. Also, what you have is multi-infarct dementia, that if you have a lot of problems related to your blood supply in the brain, and you have some areas of small blood which is not getting circulated in the brain, then it can cause dementia-like symptoms. It's called multi-infarct dementia. So see, basically, dementia is something which can be genetic, but which can also be induced. Like if you have a poor health in general, you have vitamin deficiencies, you have blood circulation issues, you don't exercise that frequently, you have cholesterol issues, then you may develop dementia in the long run. So maintaining a healthy lifestyle is very important factor in preventing dementia. But it can also be genetic, and you can also have dementia in spite of having a good, healthy lifestyle.
Okay. Thank you so much for that, doctor. That was very enlightening. And I just have one last question. What has been your most rewarding case as a psychiatrist?
See, where there are many cases like that, the good part is in last 10 years, the awareness about psychiatric issues have increased a lot, especially in COVID times. A lot of people are going through anxiety and depression. Internet and talks like this have played a huge role in creating awareness. So, before people used to feel that going to a psychiatrist is a sign of weakness. Only mad people go to psychiatrists. Psychiatrist gives medication which are sleeping pills, which are miserable side effects. But a lot of people taking medications, taking therapy, coming out with their problem, telling to the world that, I had had this problem and I came out of it. So it creates a lot of awareness. And I think there are a lot of patients who now I've seen maybe 7 years back, 8 years back, they were suicidal that time. They did not want to live their life. They also tried and attempt suicide, but they have taken treatment. They are doing very well in their life. They have become extremely successful. And once in a while, they keep messaging me that, doctor, I am living in this world because of you, and I have a happy life. My parents, my wife, my children are very, very happy because you helped me at the most critical junction of my point, where nobody could understand me and nobody knew how to help. So I think this is very satisfying because when you help somebody to completely turn around their life, it gives a great sense of satisfaction.
Of course.
So yes. I just want that people should not hesitate to seek help. They should always go and talk about their mental health issue. The parents or the teachers or the friends, if you see somebody who's undergoing a mental health issue, don't advise them too much. Listen to them, encourage them to seek help, talk to a therapist, talk to a psychiatrist. And in general, we all should see mental health just like any other physical health issue, and never hesitate to talk about it, never hesitate to take treatment for it, and never hesitate to get all right and share it to the world about your experiences, so that many people can see what you have gone through and take help accordingly.
Definitely. I can imagine how gratifying your job must be, Doctor. Kudos to you. Thank you so much for being a part of this panel today, Doctor. I understand it's a little late. Thank you so much again.
Thank you, Tanishka. You're doing a wonderful job by interviewing doctors and creating awareness about medical fraternity. I think you're doing a great job. And thank you for inviting me for this wonderful talk.
Thank you.